to talk about iron. And to give you a little bit of a background of where I'm coming from, this idea of multidisciplinary research among different disciplines is not an entirely new idea. The research unit that I'm affiliated with actually opened in 1940 to study nutrient flow from soils through food crops to people. And it was the idea of Henry Wallace, who was also the founder of Pioneer Hybrid and one of FDR's vice presidents. So we've been doing, on sort of small scale, interdisciplinary team-based research on nutrient flow for nearly 70 years. Most of, or all of, the Harvest Plus funded PIs who are in Ithaca are on the nutrition side of things. You have three animal science nutrition physiology types, Ray Glahn, who's down the hall from me, Dennis Miller, Jingen Lee, and then Ross Welch, who is a plant physiologist, but he's, I think at this point in his career, he's much more on the communication side of things. And because Ray plays golf with Leon, our research leader, and we all go to the barbecue together, everybody's aware of what everyone else is doing. I've been agitating for some years to try a particular idea, and when Ray had a new PhD student join his lab on Harvest Plus money, he said, well, you can put Angela on this for 6 months, and if it doesn't go anywhere, no harm, no foul. And it actually grew into being her dissertation project. The research that Leon's lab has been involved in for many years, and I've been involved in for the last several, is in this area of sort of physiological genomics of plant-metal interactions. And most of our recent research has been on aluminum stress tolerance, which is an acid soil problem. And we've had a number of recent high-profile publications in this area, and it's taken a lot of our time over the last several years. But smaller projects, to a degree, some of them more historical now, have also been interested in the very basic cellular physiology biochemistry of zinc and iron nutrition in plant systems. So fitting into that model of nutrient flow from soil into plants, but from a physiology biochemistry perspective, not from a breeding perspective or a genetic perspective. Although now that I'm in the USDA lab and Ed Buckler's been there for several years, we're adding much more genomics to the physiology side of things. So what I thought would be an interesting idea would be to leverage resources that Leon and Ed and I had already put together to look at aluminum stress tolerance in maize and see if we could apply them as well to this iron nutritional quality question that Ross and Ray were working with two particular goals. First, to determine what is the genetic component for seed iron concentration in maize, as that's one of the goals for Harvest Plus in general, but then also to see if we could ask what we thought might be the better question and go straight to iron bioavailability and see would this be a genetically tractable question to ask. So to give you some experimental background, for our aluminum stress tolerance work, we're working with the intermated B73 by Missouri 17 RI population. Was intermated for four generations before selfing took place. It's got about 300 rills. It's got a good number of markers. It's got a very big map due to that intermating. And we chose to do our work in 25 seed lots from row bulks that were ground to fine meal. And then for the elemental analysis part, we analyzed them using ICP. Because this initially started as a pilot based on our aluminum stress tolerance work, our first two seasons in New York were quite small. Okay, so in 2001, 2003, they were just part of our regular nursery work at the Musgrave Farm at Cornell, which is a Lima silt loam with pretty good productivity for corn and a pretty moderate pH and a water extractable pH. And in 2005, we did deliberate work on nutrition. Also in 2005, a collaborator, Steve Salma, who was then at NC State, also offered a deliberate trial on their site, which is a Norfolk loamy sand, with lower productivity and a considerably lower pH. So in this lower pH, you would expect that iron is going to be more mobile in the soil solution. Our three seasons worth of data in New York, looking at seed iron concentration, they agree pretty well. So in 2001, we had about 90 lines. 2003, we had more than 200. And in 2005, we had three reps of more than 250. And so a three-year heritability estimate is about 0.7. So we're doing okay. This looks like it's a genetically tractable trait. However, we were only seeing about a threefold variation from low to high, which was, well, I mean, it was the data. The story was quite a bit different, though, looking at the samples from North Carolina. The variation was similar in terms of being about a threefold, low to high, but it's all shifted to the right. And so now here your median seed iron concentration is twice what we were seeing in New York, which is almost certainly due to that difference in soil chemistry and how accessible to the plant iron is in the soil solution. However, looking at the performance of individual rills, the North Carolina reps agreed equally well, although all the agreements were kind of poor, with any of the New York reps as the New York reps stood with each other. Okay, so there is a consistency to the genetics that's underpinning this trait, although you can see that the effect of the environment is very large. We did our QTL analysis using SAS, using GLM, GLM Select, and we found a lot of significant markers at the significance threshold that GLM Select told us to. We detected across these four location environment, 29 singleton QTL, and then six that were duplicated. And it was about a 50-50 mix between which parent was donating the elite allele, which, if I go back a slide, you can see that the parents are close to the median values in each season. So we have this large transgressive segregation that's apparent in both environments. Using the markers that were detected by SAS, we could then build these large models that have lots of factors that have relatively small effect, but in the two good studies, we can explain about 40% of the variance in seed iron concentration using these large models. Okay, what do you do with that? Well, we went on to ask where there were six commonly, or these six repetitively detected QTL. If you just build a GLM model and ask, how well did those six markers do in all four environments? We found that four of those six were significant in both North Carolina and New York and could explain on the order of 20%, where the markers that were not consistent between the two large, well-designed studies might be looking at adaptation to that lima silt loam soil in New York. And where in the large bag of QTL, it was about a 50-50 mix of which parent was donating the elite allele. Here, it's a strong preponderance towards the Missouri 17 in terms of donating the superior. Although there is, of the four that are consistent across these two widely different soil types, B73 does contribute to that. So there is again still transgressive segregation, and the biggest effect QTL, which is near RZ87 on chromosome 5, could increase the seed iron concentration by 4 ppm, 4 parts per million in North Carolina, and about 1.5 ppm in New York. Okay, so how are we doing? The effect of the environment is very large, but we can develop genetic models that can explain on the order of 40% of the variance in seed iron concentration where a subset of those are effective and consistent, at least in 1 year, in replicated trials across these widely different soils, and explain a sort of consistent 20% variance in seed iron concentration. So this could be a starting point for biofortification work if your goal was to increase seed iron. And I'll remind you that we were working with this population because of our work in aluminum tolerance. We didn't select it specifically for work in nutrition. So to build off of the first presentation a little bit more, the old saying goes, you are what you eat. And you can build experimental diets, non-vegetarian and vegetarian, that have very similar concentrations of nutrients. However, the aphorism is better, you are what you don't excrete, because plants contain factors that limit animals' abilities to absorb those nutrients from the foods that we consume. And if you are a vegetarian, either by choice or by obligation, because you're a subsistence farmer where 90% of your calories come from some staple crop, this can have profound effects on your nutritional status. For people that have access to diverse markets and diverse foodstuffs, this is less of a problem. But again, for those subsistence farmers, this can have very severe consequences to health. So if our goal is to ask about bioavailable iron, well, how are you going to do that? We could try and screen with a proxy. We've already talked about iron concentration. People have been working for years to reduce the amount of inhibiting compounds in grains like phytate or phytic acid. However, we know that interfering with phosphorus stores in the seed can have pleiotropically negative effects on seedling development. And at this point, we don't have a very good handle for promoting compounds. So what would you go out and look for? So it seems much more reasonable that we should screen with a model subject. Piglets are one of the gold standards for working with humans. However, if you need 400 kilos per variety you're going to test, that's just not practical to do a QTL scan. Rats are much smaller than pigs, but they're also far more efficient at extracting nutrition. So again, it's not practical. The thing that seemed to be practical to us was to use a human cell culture system, the CAECO 2 model. It has a strong correlation with human subjects. It also doesn't obligate you to very large sample sizes. You can get by with 50 grams, but it is more sensitive to inhibitory compounds. So this should be a starting point rather than the finish. And this just shows you the correlation between results observed in CAECO 2 and in human trials. So there is this strong linear relationship, very tight agreement. And working in a cell culture system is really the only practical tool for nutritional phenotyping on an omics sort of a scale. And to briefly tell you how this works, we take foods, we prepare them, and then put them through enzymatic and chemical digestion, just like your body would do, and then apply that digested food over this colon cancer cell line that can be tricked into growing in a monolayer, like the epithelium of your intestine. And then we can do ELISA assays to look at the appearance of the iron storage protein ferritin, which has a very tight relationship with the amount of iron that these cells can absorb from their solution. So using our samples from the New York 2003, we put 145 rills through CAECO 2 in triplicate. It was 6 person months worth of work. B73 is right on the median. Missouri 17 is a little bit better. But to our surprise, here we're seeing a 7-fold minimum to maximum variance, so more than twice as large as iron concentration. Other surprising things, oh, and it's transgressive, that's good. Work that Reglan's lab had done with West African elite breeding material had sort of turned them off to looking at cultivar differences, because all of the values that they'd seen with the West African elites were down here, whereas we saw much wider variation. And in fact, at this end, at the high end, we're starting to hit overlap with white beans. Now, this is at the low end of the range for white beans, but it does suggest that there is useful genetic variation in corn for this trait. But when we started to think about why this would be, we started to see these lacks of correlations. And unfortunately, the vertical caption is missing, but this is the seed iron concentration plotted against the bioavailable iron fraction. And in the IBM population, there is no correlation. So if your goal to increase bioavailable iron was solely to look at concentration, that would not be an effective strategy, at least in this population. Likewise, we did extreme testing on phytate levels, and there's no difference between the low, medium, and high bioavailable lines in this population. So one of the take-homes here is we know in systems, you decrease phytate, you can improve iron bioavailability. People are already working to increase concentration. Whatever it is that we're looking at here, it's different. Using Cartographer, we identified 3 QTL, 2 donated by B73, 1 by Mo17, and this 3-factor model explains about 25% of the variance. The QTL confidence intervals are 10 to 20 centimorgans across. And because of the problems that we had with phenotyping, that it was such a large demand on Raglan's lab time, we decided to sort of cut to the chase and attempt to isolate these QTL using near isogenic lines rather than doing a second replicate. And remember, I'd already been working with near isogenic line development for our NSF plant genome funded aluminum tolerance study. So I'd already developed from 8 RILs in the IBM BC2S2 and BC3S3 family series. So when we have these 3 QTL regions to look for, I could just go into my seed room, pull out families, genotype them within 9 of those 16 series, and then identify interesting homozygous plants in my 2006 field that we then phenotyped using Keiko to assess our model. And I think the results that we got from that exercise validate the identification of the QTL. So within one population derived from IBM 39, was back crossed twice to Missouri 17 and then selfed out 3 times, we can get contrasting improved and diminished nutritional quality sister lines that vary by almost twofold in Keiko. From the same initial starting position going into B73, we can again get contrasting sister lines. And we can do that actually from another starting position, where in each of these cases, the diminished sister lines are not significantly different from the recurrent parents, but the improved versions are all significant. We can actually depress these even farther, and these are significantly different from the recurrent parents. So, we now have a first report for genetic analysis of seed iron bioavailability. We can develop models that explain 25% of the variance. We've isolated the QTL. And one of the things that we did this summer, and I got help from Torbert on this, was that we generated near isogenic hybrids. Inbred maize is something that the geneticist uses. It's not something that's really relevant to a farmer. And so we crossed elite by elite and inferior by inferior. So now we have these F1 hybrids between B73 and Missouri 17, where we've stacked either all the good alleles or all the bad alleles together to make materials that are much more representative for farmers and breeding. And so we think we've generated a strong proof of concept for biofortification and opened at least 3 new paths for research. From the genomic side, the sort of basic side of things, we've made NIL so we can do gene, protein, metabolite profiling, and perhaps even set the stage for map-based cloning. From the genetic side of things, we have these 3 loci. We can think about comparative mapping. And we can also evaluate these neuroisogenic hybrids at multiple locations to see what influence on the environment has on these QTL that we've identified. From the nutritional side of things, neuroisogenic hybrids are going to make doing the animal feeding trials far easier to generate the 400 kilos per variety that we need to do with pigs. And so we're anticipating doing pig trials next year. And if we can figure out a way to do stable isotope, we could probably do single meal trials with chickens, or and also think about doing human trials at some point in the future as well. So all of this together means that giving me one Harvest Plus funded food science grad student for 6 months as a trial really paid good dividends. So to summarize, we can detect iron concentration QTL from very different sites, although they are small in effect. We believe that we've detected QTL for iron bioavailability and confirmed them using derived lines. The neuroisogenic lines that we generated will facilitate physiological genomic studies in both plant and animal perspectives. And while if we had started off with more of an eye to the importance of germplasm and pick things that were more extreme at the beginning, we might have done better. I think we certainly demonstrated what the baseline is for biofortification research in maize. So this is a large effort from a number of different groups. In my little lab, Victoria Hodgkinson has been key. In Leon's lab, Yifang Cheng and Eric Kraft. In Ed's lab, Allison Krill. Angela Mwaniki was the grad student in Reglan's lab that did all of the CAECO work along with the technical assistance from his lab. And then our collaborators, Steve Salma, who provided the 2005 NC reps, and now Torbert Roachford with 2007 from Illinois. This research has been supported in part by Harvest Plus. All of the backcross-derived line development was done under NSF Plant Genome. USDA has also supported this. And then I'd also like to acknowledge Pioneer Hybrid for donation of an early career hybrid in large quantity in an untreated seed so that we could have consistent controls throughout the CAECO work. Thanks. Did I mention?
Is it a magic molecule or is it a magic matrix? A magic molecule.
Yeah. It's going to be something simple enough that colon cancer cell line can distinguish it. So it's not inulin. It's nothing that's interacting with probiotic factors, the bacteria that grow in your gut and help liberate molecules. We also know that if you let the corn sit out, all of the promotive effects go away. So if you grind and then you put them on the bench for a month rather than back in the freezer after all of the processing is gone, that you see a steady diminishment of the promotive effect. And by a year, high lines and low lines are indistinguishable. So that suggests that whatever is there can be oxidized or otherwise degrades with time. So.
Have you mentioned that correlation chart and very carefully, though, have some hypothesis why there's no correlation between the iron content level with the bioavailability?
Well, so I think part of it is the complexity of it. And actually, in the derived materials, there are correlations. In the Missouri 17 background, the high bioavailability does correlate with an increase in iron concentration. And I didn't make the note in the figure that in the sister lines, the high bioavailability line has about twice as much iron. But in the B73 background, the high bioavailability line actually has a little bit less than its low bioavailability sister. So I don't know what the story is there yet. But definitely in the big scan, there wasn't a correlation.
So what does it mean, I'm struck by this, you grind up your sample, mm-hmm. you lose the promoting effect, and it goes down, and then they're comparable, and so if you had your near isogenic lines, and you harvest them, and you grind them into KO2, but you have the stuff you grind, you leave it out at room temperature for 6 months, and you do it again, and you then don't have a difference.
Right. Well, yeah, no, I think we've definitely learned quite a bit about how to do this kind of phenotyping and how to do it better. And perhaps we're also learning something inadvertently at this point about what might be having promotive effects. And certainly all of that will be much easier once we start characterizing the nils and comparing that with the products of the maize genome sequencing project.
And when we're developing nils, that distribution of transgressive segmentation on IBM, mm-hmm. have you crossed the top two lines?
I thought about that this morning as I was shaving, why we hadn't bothered to do that.
I thought about it while I was listening to your talk.
Yeah. But we have a very different sort of perspective about how to approach maize genetics, and
we both shaved partially.
So I think that would be a really good thing to try, and because we know that we absolutely did not capture the variants observed in the population with these sister lines, and if what we saw was real, that we're starting to get overlap on the high end with the low end of white bean, then even in IBM, there's useful variation in iron bioavailability to exploit, which itself might tell us something. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Right.
Yes.
North Carolina is far more similar to the target environment, where you've got more acidic soils with lower base productivity. I mean, the average productivity for non-irrigated corn on the Norfolk soil series is 106 bushels per acre, where in the Poplar Ridge site on that Lima soil series, it's 120 bushels an acre. So I think North Carolina is probably more representative of the target. Well, yeah, no. That's absolutely true. I mean, I think now that we have these sister lines and we've made hybrids between diminished in both backgrounds and improved in both backgrounds, it'll be far easier for us to send to a collaborator and say, could you give us this little piece of your nursery, grow out this corn, and then send it back to us? And I think that's a much more practical kind of experiment to ask someone to participate in.
Sent some of that to a winter nursery
Right. Yep.
I got one question. You hear about phytic acid, and it's controversial. Some nutritionists and readers think you shouldn't be messing with phytic acid. But what's the, is the Plant Soil Nutrition Lab, well, you're part of it.
Yeah.
They have a view, is it a homogeneous view, or is it a fractured view?
I think there's a couple of views.
In IBM, I think the levels of phytate are just low. And that's probably why we didn't see a contribution. From Ray Glahn's perspective, the human nutritionist, he sees it as just another ligand. So if the ratio of phytate to iron is below some threshold, iron can come off phytate and be in equilibrium with other ligands in the solution, and it's not a problem. The problem is when you exceed some threshold, and then it gets increasingly difficult to remove. But one of the limitations we're working with the CAECO cells is that they are more sensitive to inhibitory compounds than a real animal would be, especially an animal that's acclimated to a diet when they're, say, iron deficient or on the verge of being iron deficient. I mean, one of the reasons that working with rats is not really appropriate is where a meal might have 5% bioavailable iron to a pig, it'll be more like 50% to a rat, because rats have better mechanisms for acquiring nutrition from what they eat.